So joining us now to talk about, really, we're quite a ways from the disaster in Japan, both geographically and in terms of time. Of course, the story we're hearing this morning is that the military is still conducting a search for the 12,000 people still presumed missing or dead from the tsunami, the earthquake, and, of course, the nuclear crisis in Japan. Joining us now is Edward Lincoln, director of the Center for Japan-U.S. Business and Economic Studies at the NYU Stern School of Business right here in New York. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And Paul Eisenstein joins us, publisher of the DetroitBureau.com. He's on the line, as he often is, from Detroit. Paul, welcome back to the program.
Hi, John. Good to be with you again.
So to both of you, no one would hold it against the Japanese industry for suggesting that the crisis in Japan has caused a problem in its industry. But there are concerns this morning as Honda, Toyota, Suzuki, Mazda, Mitsubishi, and Nissan are going to release their domestic production levels. The first time we're going to see a window on the functioning of the Japanese economy since the disaster. Paul, what are we seeing? And is there candor in those numbers or something of a reassuring whitewash?
Well, we've seen some numbers come out so far that, shall we say, stretches the definition of exactly how you do mathematics. For example, they were talking about cutting Toyota's production down sharply. In fact, the numbers were more like two-thirds of their production in U.S. operations, and yet somehow their math came out that they were barely reducing production by half. So there's a little bit of a stretching going on here.
Now, of course, Edward Lincoln, you would expect corporations to put the most positive spin on any numbers that they're releasing for whatever reason. But in this particular case, with the global economy so dependent upon Japan, is, maybe spin control a little worrisome for some of the industries that are going to face downstream some of the problems of a Japanese shutdown?
Well, certainly that's a possibility. I would say, actually, for the auto industry, that they've been relatively open about the hit that they're taking. You know, half versus two-thirds cutback. We know it's pretty severe since the earthquake. But you think about Toyota in particular. This is a company that took a huge public relations hit last year.
Over the recalls,
yeah, with their brake problem. So I think that they're in a position of having learned a little bit that at least modest amounts of honesty are a good thing.
Any evidence of that, Paul Eisenstein, from where you're sitting in Detroit? And would we expect Ford or GM to behave any differently if, the waters of Lake Huron reared up and covered Detroit?
Well, usually we have outside forces monitoring the domestic makers, so it's a little bit difficult for them to be, shall we say, less than candid when it comes to how many cars are rolling out of their factories.
Sure, so you're saying that industrial estimates of activity are government, and the government and industry are kind of in cahoots there in Japan.
That's often been something that's been said, that government has been a little bit too willing to let industry in Japan fudge things quite a bit, and the TEPCO situation is certainly a case of that. We know now that the nuclear plant was having all sorts of problems for many years, and the government was more than willing to let them hide a lot of information. I don't know if you would say that there was a true collusion on the part of government and, say, a Toyota or the like, but we do know that the Japanese government traditionally has been much looser when it comes to the auto industry in Japan, when it comes to quality and safety issues.
Let's get a reaction. I saw you nodding your head, Edward Lincoln. I couldn't tell if that was affirming or maybe disputing what Paul was saying there.
Well, if you look at the public reaction in Japan, the auto company has not been criticized very much. Most of the anger is directed against TEPCO, the electric power company that owns the nuclear power plants, and to some extent against the government for not being entirely candid about the level of damage and its impact.
Well, can we say then that even if we just look at the TEPCO situation, we're talking with Edward Lincoln, director of the Center for Japan-U.S. Business at NYU, at the Stern School of Business here in New York, and Paul Eisenstein, also on the line, publisher of the DetroitBureau.com. Edward Lincoln, are we seeing a broad critique of the way the government and business, the sort of culture of cooperation inside Japan in the wake of this crisis, or a sense that maybe they have the ability to pull together in ways that other countries don't?
Well, we may see some of both, but on the critique side, this has been an ongoing process for the last 15, 20 years, particularly in the 1990s with the financial sector, where banks were just lying through their teeth about the lack of impact and the drop of real estate prices on their business. So there have been episodes where people have become very angry at the government for being too close to government. This time it's directed against the electric power utility.
And there's been extraordinary political turmoil in Japan, really, in the last almost a generation now, leading back to the recession that began in the early 90s. So this is becoming endemic inside Japan, this sense of critique and the government's credibility. It may be said is approaching an all-time low here. Paul Eisenstein, at the very least, the takeaway is if you're looking to buy a Japanese car, it's going to be a rough model year for you, yes?
Yeah, very definitely. You're going to see a lot of shortages. The automakers are clearly putting emphasis on products like the Toyota Prius, for example, that they feel they're in high demand and may even have a social reason to be pushing those vehicles out of their plants faster than some of their other models. We're also seeing that some models are not even being put into production. Mm-hmm. Toyota is delaying the launch of their new IQ, a microcar from Scion, and a second version of the Prius, the Prius V. So there's going to be a lot of shortages, and as we're already hearing, prices are going up fast.
Right.
The Prius is now costing $3,000 more than it did just recently.
Hurry up and wait in Japan. Paul Eisenstein, publisher of the DetroitBureau.com. Our thanks to Edward Lincoln, director of the Center for Japan-U.S. Business and at the NYU Stern School of Business. Thanks so much.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.